This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, the college football coaches, the high-end college football coaches with the most pressure on them this year. We've had the Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher sparring going on this week. Which coaches have the most pressure on them in college football this year? Plus, an interesting perspective on the whole Phil Mickelson take. We'll hear from Tiger as well after day one of the PGA Championship. And what was most impressive about John Daly's performance yesterday? Did it have anything to do with a golf club? We'll get to that coming up. Appreciate the time last hour from Mike Rodak, who covers Alabama, joined us to talk about the Saban-Jimbo war of words. You know what I would love to see? Obviously, we can't get them in some sort of like boxing ring or anything. Saban's 70 years old. That wouldn't be fair. But I love a good old-fashioned celebrity deathmatch on MTV. Used to love that show back in the day. And we'll let MTV decide on celebrity deathmatch. Put them both in the ring. Saban against Jimbo. Who comes out on top? That's how we can settle this all. Appreciate the time from Mike. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. I was expecting the response from Mike, too, in terms of comparing Alabama to Buffalo when it came to game day experiences. And I've been to a lot of different colleges and you know, Power 5 schools, and I've been to a few different NFL stadiums. And I think, the college football environment, that's not that it's not wild or fans don't care, but it does seem to be almost like a little classier, especially in the Southeast here, than you go to some of these NFL stadiums, and it can be ridiculous. Now, Trent, were your experiences at Ole Miss in line with what Mike was saying?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's, 70-inch TV, chandeliers, bartenders, catering people giving you the food, and everybody is invited to every tent. If you just walk around and look lost, Luke, somebody's going to say, baby, come on here, get you something to eat, get you something to drink. And that was the most important part about it. But you had to dress up a little bit. Everybody was, the girls were in heels. The guys are usually in, button downs or something like that. I didn't really go the button down route. I'm a flannel guy, so I usually had the flannel on when it was a little colder out. But yeah, I mean, it's a full blown experience. It's an all day thing. You go out there starting, 8 a.m. in the morning. And even if the game's at 6 o'clock, you're just out there for the entire day.
I don't know if I could do like a button down, or if I was a woman, I don't know if I'm wearing heels to a football game. That seems a bit too much to me.
Yeah.
I got to be comfortable.
Well, the fraternity pledges, they were wearing full, they had coat, tie, button down, khakis, the whole thing. And I mean, that was at the start from August all the way till December. I felt incredibly bad for them.
Now, what's the deal with the chandeliers? What's the background on that?
Why just, a lot of Mississippi people with a lot of money, want to make their, Luke, there's carpeting. Like, you walk into these tents and there's carpeting, there's TVs, there's people working the tailgate. And it's like you got, walking around with, pigs in a blanket, things of that nature. I couldn't believe it the first time I experienced it, quite honestly. But it's so everybody's very, very friendly. But it's a lot different. Like, I went to a Penn State tailgate one time. You can't even compare the two. Ole Miss just wipes it out of the water 10 times out of 10.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, we used to grow up going. I remember, so my parents do a great job when it comes to tailgating, and we had UConn season tickets. Now, this is far from the SEC, plus it's Connecticut versus, how much people love football in the Southeast. And we, my family, we love our football, and we love UConn. So my parents would do a good job tailgating. But then I would go with, some of my buddies to go tailgate to the UConn game, and they just get, the pre-made sandwiches from the grocery store. And we'd be sitting there with, cheese and crackers and some wraps, some roll-ups. You get those roll-ups at the store, those little mini wraps that come, four in the pack. And I thought, this is so lame. Where's, the buffalo wings? And where's the loud music? And we were just sitting there, can't wait for the game. And I felt like I was tailgating with my grandparents.
Luke, it was like a Chick-fil-A. You know, when the breakfast turns from 10:30, as soon as like a certain time hit, there'd be eggs and bacon out. The catering people would just come and bring the lunch and then bring the dinner. It's unbelievable what they do in the South. Crazy.
Oh, yeah. Now, unfortunately, nowadays, right, because of the job, I'm there to broadcast. But a lot of times because of where we park or if you go with the team or whatever, you go through the parking lots and it's like, oh, man. These people are having fun. I don't get to experience tailgating very often anymore for football games. But I see the setups, and these people listening, you know, because you do it too. People do it up. Hey, the PGA Championship started yet. Oh, no, before I get to that, while we're on the subject of, like, tailgating and partying and all this sort of – and alcoholic beverages, we have to get – we have to mention this. I don't want to say it because I'm going to say it wrong again. What did you bring in today, Trent, for a few others?
I brought in Froze, Luke.
Froze.
Now, you know, this all started with our partnership with the Charleston Battery, and there's a place called Co-op that works with the Charleston Battery, and they serve Froze's. And now, you know, on a couple different occasions, it was pronounced incorrectly from some of our hosts, a la Luke Morrow and Bobby Harton. So what did I do on this, you know, hot Friday? It's a Froze Friday, Luke. I brought in Froze for everybody to enjoy. It's in the back, freezing up, ready to go.
I'm looking forward to trying it. I have no idea what it is. What is a Froze?
It's frozen rosé. That's it. That's it.
I'm not as excited now, but still, I'm
curious
to try.
With a little flavoring in there. Uh-huh. Like there's, they do it up. It's not just, you know, I'm not a rosé guy, but as soon as I had one of these, I said, sign me up. What are we talking about?
I do like a good frozen drink. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
I don't mind. I don't mind how I look. I'll go out to a restaurant, and I'll get a nice pina colada. I'll get a daiquiri. I don't care. Give me a weird cup and a fruity drink. I'm all good. Yeah, so there was a script. We had to cut a commercial for the Battery. And now, in my defense, our sales team always sends the commercial back to the Battery, and they didn't say that I said it incorrectly. How did I pronounce it? Do you remember?
You said Froze. You said chilled Froze out on the pavilion. I mean, it was one of the best ad reads I've ever heard. Like, no doubt about it.
And then what'd Bobby say?
Froze. Bobby said froze. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Well, at least
which confused me more than the Froze when he said froze. Like, yeah. There's a Z in froze, so I was confused.
Go out to the Battery game, get yourself a nice froze. And also the context doesn't really fit. All right, at least I didn't do worse than that. But I am very curious to now try such a thing after hearing about it for weeks, ever since my screw-up. And they're promoting it, so it must be a big deal. People are coming out and drinking them at the Battery game. Especially now, look, it's in the 90s today. So that's another reason why living in the South for the last 8 years, I love a nice frozen drink because it's just so hot out. That's what's refreshing. Too hot. You can't be drinking bourbon, and so when it's hot, I mean, I'm sure people do. But I'm more of like a rum tequila guy. Throw some ice in there. Give me a pina colada, daiquiri. Let's cool off and have a good time.
Oh yeah, and these are very good, Luke. I do believe you'll enjoy it. Now, Sir Robert Harton, on the other hand, I don't know if he's gonna enjoy it.
Yeah, because he's the bougier one, and despite what he tries to claim about me, he likes his top shelf stuff.
Oh yeah, the bougie boys over here. That's no, right. He's bougie. Come on now.
I'll slap the bag. I drink a lot of cheap stuff. No problem. All right. I got to try this. It is Friday. I'm a professional, but once 3 o'clock comes around, then all bets are off. Then we're good to go on pretty much a summer weekend. It feels like the summer, and we're almost at Memorial Day. By the way, Wall Street Journal, I saw, speaking of Fridays and nice weather out, Wall Street Journal sent something. My buddy sent a screenshot where Wall Street Journal sent a notification saying, let me bring it up here. It says, why not take the rest of the day off? It's basically impossible to get fired these days. I don't even think there was an article. I think that was just a push notification they sent to people's phones this afternoon. So why not? Bust out the frozen drinks on a Friday. Kick your feet up and enjoy the rest of the afternoon. You're not getting anything done today anyways. Have some fun. Oh, there it is.
We've
Bobby's
got the Froze's. Yeah. So it's in a 16-ounce bottle. It's very nice. Very nice. They're good. They're good. Oh no, he said he's a professional. He won't have it. He won't have it on.
Yeah, maybe next hour.
A nice froze.
That's right.
A nice froze.
That's right. A nice froze. Bobby's ready to go. All right, I got that to look forward to. Let's get to the PGA Championship. You know, I've said in regards to the Phil Mickelson comments, we've been talking about this over the last couple of weeks. What he said was not great. He said the quiet part out loud. And it was kind of I don't know, to hear him say it, right? Like, it's just kind of disgusting, I guess. I mean, we know people always make decisions based over money, but when you're so openly, when you slap us in the face with it, it's kind of insulting. But anyways, my whole thing in all this is that, yeah, he deserves to be punished. He deserves people to be upset at Phil. There should be some sort of blowback from the comments. But I do also think it's weird that he is, like, completely blackballed, at least for the time being, from the golf room. I felt like almost a little too harsh. And maybe it's apples to oranges, but, you know, the comparison that I keep bringing up, and I've seen others do it as well, is the idea of, you know, the NBA looks the other way when it comes to China because they make money off of it. Phil was essentially, he's doing the same thing, or was trying to. He was going to look the other way when it comes to Saudi Arabia because he was going to make money off of it. And a lot of other people have done similar things. And so I thought the punishment for Phil does not fit the punishment for others who have done similar things. I guess that was my point. That I was surprised. The reaction has been so harsh towards Phil when maybe it wasn't towards others that do something similar. Maybe because Phil was just so brazen that he actually just comes out and says it when most people tried to be coy about the whole thing. But then there was Alan Shipnuck, who wrote the book. That's where this whole story came from, by the way. Phil said those quotes, those words to Alan. He came out with the book. He was on the Colin Cowherd show yesterday on Fox Sports, and he put it in a different perspective that I have not thought about but makes a lot of sense. Here's what Shipnuck said in regards to why people are actually so upset with Phil. It's not so much about the comments. And at the very to set up this clip, he's talking about if he was surprised or not by what Phil said and the blowback. Here was Shipnuck yesterday.
I was a little bit surprised, but it didn't have such a wallop on me because it seemed obvious that Phil was working both sides of the street and he was engaged in these secret negotiations with Saudi Arabia. Everybody knew that. We just didn't know the extent. But he was pretty openly courting the Saudi money and he was recruiting players on the sly. And it was quite obvious to folks in the game that Phil was really enmeshed with them. You know, he said the quiet parts out loud. That was the surprising thing.
Yeah.
That he, he was so callous in acknowledging and then dismissing the atrocities of Saudi Arabia, who we know they're bad actors on the world stage. And so those words had an impact. But something I think has been lost a little bit is the reason he was put on ice by the tour, and whether you call it a suspension or a leave of absence, it's clear that the tour told him to go away for a while.
Yeah.
It was not so much the words, it was the deeds, which was Phil, you know, telling me quite clearly that he had helped the Saudis get this league organized. And he was almost serving as a de facto commissioner in helping to get, you know, oversee the writing of the operating agreement so it'd be most advantageous for the players. And at that point, he's not just a passive observer who might collect some of the money. Like, he's really actively undermining the interests of the PGA Tour in a substantial way. And that's why he thought he was sent into exile. It wasn't because of human rights concerns or because of morality. It's because it was about the money. Because if this Saudi league succeeds and Phil helps launch it and it starts siphoning away TV contracts and big time sponsors,
sure,
that's money that's not flowing to the PGA Tour. And he's threatening the economic livelihood of his colleagues. That's why they were upset with him. So the words have got a lot of attention, but it's more about the backroom dealing that is what got Phil in trouble with the tour and his colleague.
Shipnuck yesterday. Seems like an obvious point, but it's one that I haven't thought of and no one else has really said. That it's not so much about the comments, it's what he was trying to do to his peers on the PGA Tour. And that makes more sense. Because I don't know if the punishment, I'll be honest with you, it's not that I agree with what Phil's saying. I'm not trying to defend him either. But I don't know if the punishment has really fit the crime of just what he has said. Because a lot of people have said some terrible things, and they haven't been banned from their sport for potentially, you know, people would think that we may not see him until next year, whether that's his decision or the PGA's decision or has been a combination of the two. But it's more about what he was attempting to do. Where by trying to start this competing tour or being the big spokesperson, or as Shipnuck says there, like the quasi-commissioner, right? You're almost the ones running it. You're taking money out of the pockets of the golfers that are with you on the PGA Tour. It's almost like a backstab. It's like Kyrie Irving. Remember during the pandemic, Kyrie didn't want to go into the bubble for the NBA. And then he said, like, how about I'm going to start my own league and we're going to branch off. And that never went anywhere. Never was going to. But some people are still upset about that idea. And I always compare situations. I think what makes a great sitcom specifically is that it's relatable. And so I think Seinfeld's the greatest sitcom of all time because you can compare everything in your everyday life to something from Seinfeld. It happens to me all the time. Something happens, I think, oh my gosh, this is just like the Seinfeld episode. Everything that always happens. And The Office is another one. These are the two shows that I reference the most because I think they're the most relatable. They're also incredibly popular, so they're not some sort of deep cut reference that you have no idea what I'm talking about. Now, not everybody has seen Seinfeld or The Office or even likes the shows, but a lot of people have. The numbers are out there. So anyways, the comparison for The Office is obvious, right? The Michael Scott paper company. When Michael Scott tries to start up a direct competitor, and it costs him to lose his job. Well, he already quit, but he had his 2 weeks, right? And then he gets kicked out. He gets fired at that point. Your 2 weeks are up. You can't be starting a competitor on our dime, which is what Mickelson was trying to do. And then more so than that, when Michael Scott comes back to work at Dunder Mifflin and he wants an apology, and Phyllis, one of his employees at Dunder Mifflin, said, I'm paraphrasing, right? But you thought you were hurting Dunder Mifflin. You were actually hurting us. You were stealing all of our clients. You were taking money away from us. And as Phyllis also said, like, you always said we were a family. Then you came after us. Now, I don't know if Phil has close enough relationships on the tour that, you know, other golfers would look at Phil as a family member. And now he's kind of going behind their backs. But you think you're going after the PGA Tour. Phil's complained about the PGA Tour. We had, Sergio Garcia complaining about the PGA Tour. But the problem is, while trying to potentially attack the PGA Tour with a competitor, what you're also doing is attacking the actual golfers that you've been hanging out with and competing with and you've been a peer with for years. Because by trying to hurt the PGA Tour and create a competitor to try to knock them down, right, you're taking money away from the PGA Tour, therefore taking money away from said golfers. And so as Shipnuck put into perspective there yesterday on Fox Sports Radio, it's not so much the comments. They don't care so much about what he said. As maybe disgusting as the comments may be, we can get past that. But it's more about, like, what he was trying to do. Like, Phil, that's not okay. That's pretty screwed up. Not only were you trying to come after the PGA Tour, but if I'm another golfer, like, you're trying to screw us over. Forget that. Going to go start your own tour to try to, you know, he's trying to start a competitor that will perform better than us. And while you think it's revenge on the PGA Tour because you don't like how maybe they've treated you, or you don't like some of the rules, it also affects, obviously, the golfers as well. While Michael Scott is trying to undercut Dunder Mifflin and get back at them for the way he felt like he was treated in the process, those employees that he worked with for so many years were also being attacked, losing more money as he was stealing their clients. And that's where these golfers or the PGA Tour themselves are upset with Phil. And you weren't thinking about it. You were trying to screw us over. That's not cool. And so I get that idea. And that makes more sense. Not so much about the words, but really more the actions. And we know actions speak louder than words. That Phil was trying to come up with some sort of, he was working to try to create a competitor for the PGA Tour, but, you know, let's forget the tour. It's not good news for the golfers either. And there's a reason why most people came out with strong words against Phil. I don't think I've seen a golfer defend Phil or come to his, you know, step up for him, be in his corner, support him, or at least, you know, feel bad or anything. Nothing. Any comments regarding Phil Mickelson from other golfers have been towards the negative. And some golfers came out with really harsh words when this whole thing started. And now that makes more sense. And I never thought of that. And I haven't really heard anybody else say it. And it seems very obvious. But when Shipnuck put it into perspective like that yesterday, I said, oh, yeah, that's a good point. It's not so much about just the words. People don't care, right? We all say stupid things. We all step in it every once in a while. You can move past that. You can forgive somebody. They can apologize. They can get a second chance. But it's the fact that he's trying to create a competitor that not puts you out of business, but it's, you know, he wouldn't put the PGA Tour under. But just like if you had a friend. You have a successful company, and then your friend tries to start a competitor across the street. It's like, what are you doing? Why are you trying to hurt my business? I thought we were friends. Now, that's not a cool move, even if the guy didn't work for you. He just started a new business, and it's exactly what you do, and he did it across the street, and he put up lower prices, and he's trying to steal your business. It's like, I thought we were friends. That's not cool. We're supposed to be friends. Now you're trying to steal money from my pockets. I get that more than, you know, potentially just being upset about the words. Tiger Woods did not have a great day yesterday. Here was Tiger talking yesterday after his round about how he felt and how things went yesterday for him in round one.
Yeah, my leg is not feeling as good as I would like it to be. We'll start the recovery process and get after it tomorrow. I just can't load it. And loading hurts, and pressing off it hurts, and walking hurts, and twisting hurts. So it's just golf. If I don't play that, if I don't do that, then I'm all right.
Yeah. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? I mean, my goodness. That doesn't sound good. Tiger Woods was 4 over par yesterday. He tees off at 236 today. And We'll keep you updated before we go. He'll tee off before we leave this afternoon, so we'll get you. We'll sneak in a Tiger update or two before we leave you this afternoon as he tees off this afternoon. But he's 9 strokes behind the leader, and as he said there, right, doesn't sound great. And that's day one, and that's without golfing since at least in a PGA, you know, at least in some sort of professional event since the Masters. So not ideal. And unfortunately, this is probably the new reality. I don't know if things will get better for Tiger over time from a health standpoint. And you can see the potential, right? Certain shots, you see he still has the club work. He just doesn't have the physical side of it. And we were on the air yesterday. I was watching it during commercial breaks or whatever it may be, you know, paying attention. I wasn't watching it too closely yesterday, but a lot of people were saying by the end of the day, he was clearly limping. It looked worse off than when he first took the course, right? His body took a beating. That's what happens. And that's on day one. Imagine him trying to go through a full weekend again, like the Masters, and doing this over and over again. My concern would be, I don't know if the further we get along, like the better his body will be in handling this, if we're still very early on in his recovery, because the accident wasn't that long ago, or if this is just the new Tiger. And if this is the new Tiger, it's going to be very hard for him to compete all weekend long with how much his body can or cannot handle right now. When we come back, John Daly. What was the most impressive part about John Daly's Thursday yesterday in Oklahoma? And it may have had nothing to do with a golf club. We'll get to that next. The Mara Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up with which college football coach has the most pressure on them this year, the most to prove. Plus, we'll get back to the NBA Plus. Can you ever miss the birth of your child for a sporting event? Get to that coming up. And a whole lot more to do throughout the afternoon. Now, I was just talking last segment about Tiger, Phil Mickelson, day one of the PGA Championship. We'll keep you posted on Tiger once he tees off next hour. Rory McIlroy's in the lead right now, 5-under. And joining him now is right now Justin Thomas is tied. He's gone 2-under today, so they're tied 5-under. Will Zalatoris 4-under, so on and so forth. But the big story, one of the show stealers yesterday, was John Daly. Now, I've shared before, I used to love John Daly. I'd always play with him in the Tiger Woods video game, and he was great. How can you not love such a guy? Well, he was kind of a jerk to me the one time I happened to meet him. And so now I'm not so much of a John Daly fan. But nonetheless, keeping personal grudges out of it. Yesterday, John Daly, who, you know, it's interesting. Tiger chooses not to use a cart. John Daly does use a cart. You can get an exemption or an exception made to use a cart for physical or health purposes. Daly uses a cart. So yesterday, Will Brinson was following him around and tracking John Daly's every move. So John Daly yesterday shot 2 over par. So he was 2 over par, and over his 18 holes, he had 21 cigarettes, 12 Diet Cokes, 6 packs of peanut M&Ms, and 0 ounces of water. That was John Daly's day yesterday in the piping hot heat of Oklahoma, riding around in the cart. Sounds like probably a lot of people you know, their day on the golf course. Some cigarettes, some soda, no water, some candy, riding around in the cart, shooting a 2 over par, which that's pretty solid for such a diet. 21 cigarettes. That's more than one cigarette per hole. 21 cigarettes. I didn't even know these guys could smoke out there during such an event. Trent, what's the most impressive part to you? Getting through 21 cigarettes on an 18-hole journey, 12 Diet Cokes, so that's almost one soda.
Yeah.
Per hole, which is a lot to pound 12 Diet Cokes out there in one round. 6 packs of peanut M&Ms. You're going to another bag of peanut M&Ms every third hole. Or not drinking any water when it was really hot out yesterday. And then also shooting two over. What impresses you most about John Daly?
Well, besides the two over, I mean, you know, we would all relish to shoot a two over in a singular round of golf, but it's got to be the 21-6. I mean, you're ripping 21 darts on the golf course. More power to you, and to shoot the score that he shot. Luke, I would argue that drinking 12 Diet Cokes in a four-hour span is actually worse than smoking the 21 cigarettes. I mean, that cannot be good. And the best part about all of this, Luke, as soon as he finished the round, somebody snapped a photo of John Daly in the casino playing on the slots, and he was drinking a Diet Coke and smoking a cigarette.
I did see that.
Unbelievable. He's the people's champ.
Yeah. Yeah, I did see that. He was in his sandals, playing slots, too, which is perfect, John Daly, of course. You know, if he's in the casino, he's going to sit there like your grandmother at the slot machine all night, you know, ripping heaters and pulling down the slot to try to win a big prize.
He was just holding hundos, and it just seemed like he kept putting them in, just putting them in.
Pounding Diet Cokes. Now, I had a teacher growing up, like, way back when I was in, like, third grade. And she used to pound Diet Coke. She used to have the big, you know, back in school, they used to have, like, the industrial-sized trash bags. She would have trash bags on the counter in the classroom with just Diet Coke cans filled with Diet Coke. She would go through so many Diet Cokes throughout the day. And then years later, when I grew up and I was, like, in high school or something, I don't know, she cut out the Diet Coke. She lost a lot of weight just by simply removing Diet. She was having a Diet Coke. She was, like, chain-drinking Diet Cokes. Like, there was always one in her hand. Crazy. Yeah, that stuff. People drink diet soda because it's diet and it doesn't have the sugar. They think it's good. The phony stuff they put in there is probably worse for you than just having a regular soda.
It's still soda. Just like throwing that out there. Right. Like, it's still a soda. It doesn't matter what it says on there.
I know. People will go to and look, I like fast food as well, but I always, you're right. People go to get fast food and then they'll, well, but make the soda a diet. That'll weigh things out. Let me get three Big Macs, but I'll at least have a diet soda. I won't get the full regular soda. 21 cigarettes yesterday, 12 Diet Cokes, 6 packs of peanut M&Ms. I'll tell you what, I'll do the peanut M&Ms. I'm not a smoker. At least not. I don't smoke cigarettes. I'll have an occasional cigar out on the course. You won't see me with a cigarette. And Diet Cokes, I mean, if I was really thirsty, it's the only thing in the fridge, I'll have a Diet Coke. It's not really a drink of choice. But I love peanut M&Ms. Peanut M&Ms is becoming one of my favorite candies.
Wow.
So I'm all in on the peanut M&Ms.
Wow, that's a transition as of recently?
Yeah, so you know what it is? I don't know. Actually, I don't know what it was that led to the peanut M&Ms. I think my father always liked peanut M&Ms, and I remember growing up, I did not like them. I don't know why. I preferred the regular M&Ms. I thought, I just want chocolate. I don't want peanuts in my chocolate. That didn't sound good as a kid. And then somewhere along the lines, I made a change that now I prefer the peanut M&M over the regular M&M.
Wow.
And it's such a problem. I spend so much time in hotels, not so much now. Before I had my previous job, I'd spend about a third of the year in a hotel room. And that's my addiction, is that whenever I'm in a hotel room, they got the candy right downstairs.
Oh, yeah.
How can I not go down there and get something for a dollar?
Just stock up. Yeah. I mean, it's usually relatively cheap. Just go up there and stock up.
And so I because also I'm a night person, so I'm up late. You know, you get a little hungry late at night. They got all that candy downstairs. I have a sweet tooth. And so when I'm in a hotel, usually it's the go-to is the peanut M&Ms. And I've eaten a lot of peanut M&Ms on road trips over the years. But I'll tell you what, 6 bags, I don't think I could do that. At a certain point, you take in so much sugar, right? You ever have to try? You ever eat dessert and like the cake is so rich, you can't even finish it or anything. Like there's so much sweetness. You know, I used to love not your father's root beer. It was an alcoholic root beer, and they discontinued it. I love that drink. It's a beer that tastes like root beer. How can you top that? But that was one of those I could only have like one. You go to a second one, it's like drinking soda. I can only have one soda in one sitting. I can't drink like a whole liter. Of soda, a whole bottle of soda. I'll have one can, and after that, it's like, oh, you almost, like, I feel nasty almost.
Yeah, you were talking about the frozen drinks earlier. That's kind of, you know, there's a lot of sugar in those, too. You can have a strawberry daiquiri, but once you get to the second one, it's like, oh, I'm having a sugar rush. My head hurts. Like, it's bad news.
Right, same idea. Yeah, absolutely. I'll go get a pina colada. I'm not getting a second one.
No, no.
After one, I'm good. Like, my teeth hurt from the sugar. Like, I'm all set. I don't need a second one. So 6 bags of peanut M&Ms with the 12 Diet Cokes.
What's most impressive to you out of all of this?
Whew. Good question. What did you end up saying? Diet Cokes? Is that your answer?
I said the darts.
The cigarettes.
Yeah. But I said that it's probably worse to drink 12 Diet Cokes in a four-hour span than to smoke 21 cigarettes.
Most impressive to me was probably the Diet Cokes. Yeah. Because I could do, if you said you have to do one of these, oh, I'm pounding the M&Ms, no problem. I just said I don't want to eat 6 packs, but if I had to choose between a bunch of M&Ms, Diet Coke or cigarettes? Yeah, I'll get through the M&Ms. My sweet tooth will rally. Cigarettes, I'm not a cigarette smoker, but I imagine there's a lot of people out there that are smoking 21 cigarettes over, whatever, a four-hour window.
Yeah, especially if you're on the course with the buddies. Absolutely. Yeah, you'll rip some darts.
The Diet Cokes, though. To pound 12 Diet Cokes in 4 hours between, I don't know. Like, I can't even drink that much. Well, I can't drink that much anything in 4 hours. I don't think I've ever had 12 beers in 4 hours.
John Daly's the type of guy that's going to live to 100, and we have no idea how.
That's
like,
right.
He's one of those guys that just lives his life the way he wants to live, and everybody thinks, oh, it's an early exit for John Daly. No, he's going to live longer than everybody.
That's true. Now, credit to John. By the way, how old would you guess? Maybe you know the answer, but how old would you guess John Daly is?
I'll go 64.
He's 56.
I feel so bad.
No, you shouldn't, because he looks 64. And he's got that big Santa beard now.
Yeah.
And he's all gray, and he's a big guy.
But the way he swings the club, though, it's like, how is this all working in one motion?
True.
Because I feel like his belly's going to hit the club every time he goes through the swing. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's wild. He's living his best life, though. I mean, the guy's enjoying life. But that's a great point. You look at, like, Keith Richards and wonder, how has this guy made it to 80 with the way he's lived? And yet, he's up there. He's still performing and touring, him and Mick Jagger, all these rock stars. Roger Daltrey, all these guys. Like, how do these guys, of all people, these are the guys making it till 80? Your doctor tells you you got to cut certain things out of your diet, and you got to exercise and do this and that, and don't do drugs, don't smoke, don't, you know, drink casually. And then you see these old-school rock and rollers all living till they're 90. What the heck? They turn doctors. They have to be the doctor's enemy. They make a bunch of doctors or like physicians or nutritionists, all these people that work in the medical field. They make them look like liars. You go see the doctor. They tell you to do all these things. And then you see somebody like John Daly. He's probably going to live till he's 110. Crazy. 12 Diet Cokes, 21 cigarettes, 6 packs of peanut M&Ms, no water in one round of work yesterday for JD. When we come back, we get to Trent's takes. More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll get to Trent's takes in just a moment. We were talking last segment about John Daly, by the way. While we're listening or thinking of music, John Daly released a couple of albums. I'll have to listen to his music.
Oh, we might. We might have to play one after this break.
Absolutely.
I've listened to a couple of them. Interesting. You know, like, John Daly can play the guitar. I know he's very good at the guitar. So he's a music phenomenon, if you will.
Not just in music and everything. Somebody asked him why he doesn't drink water. He said he hates the taste of water, which I do kind of get. But there's flavored water. I mean, there's a lot of better options than Diet Coke. Plus, you just need water to stay hydrated out there. Doesn't like the taste of water. Rolls with the Diet Cokes. If you have 12 Diet Cokes in a round of golf, what about using the bathroom? These golfers, they never show them. Do they take bathroom breaks out there on the tour? You have 12 Diet Cokes. I imagine John Daly's got to find a bathroom at some point. Anyways, we do it around this time each and every day. It's time for Trent's Takes.
What's on the mind of the Morrow Midday Show producer?
Draft Luke Morrow.
That's right.
It's time for Trent's Takes.
The radio cowboy will be coming, and he's coming soon, folks. Luke, as I mentioned at the top of this here said program, keeping positive vibes for the Miami Heat. Now, I will point out a couple things, as I've been pointing out. Just go through the box score, and you can see who steps up and who did not step up if you didn't watch the game. Now, I watched the game, and I saw Bam Adebayo take 6 shots. Luke, he had 6 points. He went 3 for 6. as the starting center of the Miami Heat, that is not the way you need to play basketball. I need him to put up 10 shots. He's got a good mid-range jumper. It's not great, especially for a big man, but it's good enough to where you can hit some shots on a guy like Al Horford or Robert Williams. I also will point out Tyler Hero. Duncan Robinson had, you know, played about 15 minutes yesterday. What did he do? Nothing. $90 million. Still doing that whole thing. And it's also interesting, Luke, my main takeaway from last night is that obviously we've had the super teams over the last, 10 years that have kind of dominated the, the finals and everything like that. To say that Marcus Smart and Al Horford were the main pieces, you know, to bring back the Boston Celtics or for them to play good basketball is kind of mind-boggling to me. We're not talking about Kevin Durant returning for the Warriors. We're not talking about Kyrie Irving sitting out, you know, in the finals when he was with the Cavs. Not Draymond Green missing a game. We're talking about Marcus Smart and Al Horford being incredibly, you know, important pieces for this Celtics team. I am a little concerned about the Heat from last night. I mean, Jimmy Butler had a good night. You know, I did predict the over. Thank you very much. Took that, no problem. He scored 29 points. But the rest of the team didn't show up. I don't think Marcus Smart can shut down Jimmy Butler on every, you know, given night. But at the same time, if Hero's not hitting his shots, if Strus isn't hitting his shots, Vincent played well again. I thought he was going to be out, but he needs to play better, especially if he's starting in the ball game. But besides that, Luke, I would love if Kyle Lowry came back. If Kyle Lowry came back when we needed him, this would be the most, you know, best thing that could happen for the Heat. But I will say the concern level, Luke, from a 1 to a 10 is about at a 6.5 right now. But it's a positive Friday, so we're keeping positive vibes. But I'm not losing hope yet. But Marcus Smart, now Horford coming back, really showed last night that the Boston Celtics are one of the most complete teams in the NBA when everybody's healthy, Luke.
Yeah, and they all contributed too, yep. Which was huge. You mentioned Bam. At the start of this round of the playoffs, I did the top five best players remaining. We know the top four. You just depends how you order them. That fifth spot is an interesting debate, and I chose Bam over Jaylen Brown. Well, last night you got to play like the next best guy on the floor. Because, as you mentioned, Bam wasn't great, had 6 points, and Jaylen Brown went for 24. And the Celtics had three guys score over 20 points. They had four guys score over 18. So, you know, that's how you win a playoff game on the road. And now not only Lowry, but P.J. Tucker's injured now, right?
Yep, he's injured. And then, I mean, Victor Oladipo's playing decent minutes coming off the bench, but that's also a guy, Luke, when you see the name on the, you know, on the box score, you would assume that he'd score more points, right? It'd be more of a factor in the ball game. Him and Tyler Hero are kind of on the same level where they'll give you 12, you know, on a given night in 22 minutes, 23 minutes. But that doesn't matter when it comes to playoff time, Luke. It's very, very frustrating to see guys we pay a lot of money that aren't contributing to the team in the way we need them to. And a guy like Jimmy Butler is the only thing we have right now. Speaking of only thing they have right now, the Dallas Mavericks. They've got Luka, and that's about it. Now, what I will say about Luka is Klay Thompson did a good job, you know, defending Luka in game one. I don't know if Luka was all the way either healthy or recovered. He just seemed a little slow. He plays slow, but he just seemed a little slow. I don't think Klay Thompson can keep up with Luka, you know, through a seven-game series if it does go to seven games. So I will say another prediction I'll throw it out there. I'm not going to pick against the spread today, Luke, because 6 points is a lot of points, and I do not know what's going to happen in this ball game. But I do see Luka hitting his over at 31.5 points tonight. I think he'll go off. Klay Thompson can't guard him for four quarters, especially if he's rested and recovered. I will say about this series, though, Luke, Dallas obviously doesn't have the pieces around Luka to be able to beat a team like the Golden State Warriors, which, by the way, in the last 8 years have three NBA championships. I know two of them were with Kevin Durant, and that's obviously a massive help, but this team won a championship before. I know Steph Curry, I would say, I don't want to even say Steph Curry's lost a whole step, like you mentioned yesterday, kind of a half step. He's a little bit slower than what he used to be, but he can still hit shots. Klay Thompson can still hit shots. Draymond Green can still, you know, play a phenomenal defense. Jordan Poole stepping up. Andrew Wiggins. So I don't see this Dallas team being able to compete in a seven-game series with the Warriors. Luka, on the other hand, I mean, he might go for 40 or 50 tonight, you know, but the other team, when you look at the box score, Jalen Brunson will have 15, you know, Reggie Bullock will have 10, and that's just not going to win you games going forward. That's why I see the Warriors probably, you know, closing this thing out in six games or so, Luke.
Yeah, the Mavericks aren't ready just yet. They need somebody else a running mate for Luka. Luka, I don't think, will play as poorly as he did in game one again, and I like your idea that, you know, he's not going to have two bad games in a row. But we did have those reports that he was sick and was up most of the night after that game. So I don't know. Is he still under the weather? You know, in the second half, I said on the show, I guess that was yesterday, in the second half of that Game 1 loss, like he looked checked out, maybe because he wasn't feeling well. But we also got that photo of him the day before out having beers.
Yeah, with Boban. Yeah.
So, I don't know. Was it like the Irish flu? Did he have a little too much to drink? If you're not feeling well, why are you going out drinking the day before? And I hate when these stories, I always say this, I hate when the stories come out after the fact.
Yep.
If you tell me before the game, hey, Luke is sick, he's not feeling well, all right, then, you know, so be it. But when he has a terrible game and then, oh, by the way, well, he was sick, he wasn't feeling well, it just sounds like an excuse. So I expect a great bounce back from Luka tonight. I'd agree with you. But I don't know, maybe he is truly under the weather, not feeling well and not 100%. Last thing I'll say, Luka this year was 21-5 following a loss for the Mavericks. And against the spread, 20-6 following a loss. So if you are a gambling man, keep an eye on that tonight. As Trent said, they're like six-point underdogs. Maybe the Mavs will even things up tonight.
Yeah, that plus six looks interesting. Sidebar, I've been to the restaurant that he was at. That's called Epic Steakhouse. It's right under the San Mateo Bridge in San Francisco, right near the Giants Stadium. Absolutely beautiful folks in there. It's phenomenal. And look like, him and Boban were just enjoying a couple pops looking over the bridge. Great, great place to eat food. I absolutely loved it. Good steak, too. Great, not great steak, but good steak. I will say that, Luke. Interesting note here. Jordan Addison, Biletnikoff winner, former Pitt wide receiver, obviously hit the transfer portal about a month ago, was going on visits. He went to Texas. He went to Alabama. He went to Georgia. And he went to Southern Cal. And yesterday it was announced that Jordan Addison, the best receiver in college football, will be headed to Southern Cal. I will say this, just to throw it out there, folks, plus 3,000 for Southern Cal to win the national championship. Quite interesting. And here's why. By the way, same odds as Texas A&M, which interesting. I don't see Texas A&M. All the recruits they got are 18-year-olds. So if you think about five or six five-star freshmen can come in and win national championship, I don't think so. But Luke, listen to the folks that USC has. They're stars on offense. Mario Williams last year, freshman at OU, now is a sophomore at Southern Cal, had a great freshman season with Caleb Williams. Obviously, you add Jordan Addison into the mix, Biletnikoff winner. Travis Dye, four-year running back at Oregon last season, 1,200 yards and 16 touchdowns in the Pac-12. He knows how to run against these defenses in Pac-12. Luke, I don't want to get, you know, too over the top here, and you also have a Heisman candidate in Caleb Williams at playing quarterback. The defense looks strong. Is Lincoln Riley about to go on a run here to the college football playoff? And we talk about parity all the time. This brings parity if Southern Cal is in the college football playoff, finally get a Pac-12 team in there. Since the last time it was Oregon, you know? So I think Southern Cal being on this, I know a lot of people hate the transfer portal and hate the NIL, and we talked about that yesterday, but this is good for college football. We have a super team out there in LA now that if they don't, you know, if they don't win, it's going to be a bust. This is a national championship or bust type season for Southern Cal because they have all the talent and they have it right now, Luke.
Yeah, they do. They have, like you said, I mean, they have two top 10 receivers based off of just like recruiting rankings. The quarterback would be a top 10. Yeah, it's wild. Lincoln Riley ignored the high school recruits and just did all the work in the transfer portal. My one concern, I think they're going to be a lot better this year than they were last year. When it comes to the playoff, yes, they're in a bad conference. And we haven't seen something like this where you pool this much talent together, maybe in an offseason. But we also haven't seen a turnaround like this for USC to go from last year to like a playoff team.
Yep.
We've never really seen. The largest turnaround in college football history, Hawaii went from an 0-12 year to then winning 9 games the next year. And that was in the late 90s. USC would be doing something similar in terms of the increase in wins. It would be pretty close in order to have to get to the playoff this year. So I think Lincoln Riley is going to get USC back on the map. I think they will be a playoff team. I just don't know if they do it in year one. But on paper, yeah, that offense, they have a lot of talent. My one concern about year one is, you know, everybody needs some time to gel and get on the same page. That could be an issue. But, boy, are they putting some talent together out there.
No, it's absolutely crazy, Luke. Last thing here. Apparently, several of Deshaun Watson's accusers have sat down for an interview with Real Sports HBO, and that will be airing on Tuesday, May 24th. Luke, this could get interesting. We haven't really heard from any of the accusers outside of in the courtroom, so now they're sitting down. I believe Brent Gumbel does the interviews for Real Sports HBO. If they're sitting down and talking about this, this could open wide up, wide open once again, Luke. And it's going to be interesting to see what the Browns do with this and everything. But Tuesday, May 24th, we will hear from some of the accusers of Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, that will be really interesting to see what they have to say next week. And we're still waiting. The NFL was talking to Deshaun this week. We'll see if we get any sort of clarity on what they plan to do or not do in this whole Deshaun case. But it's certainly not going away anytime soon. And yeah, we'll see what that brings next week. Mm-hmm. Have you been following along the Johnny Depp, Amber Heard stuff?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hashtag free Johnny. Are you kidding me? Absolutely, Luke. Absolutely. It's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. I don't know if you've noticed. One thing I'll say about that, Luke, is that any outfit that Johnny Depp wears, the next day Amber Heard wears an identical outfit.
Interesting.
Crazy.
Why do you think that is? What's that play there?
Yeah, I don't want to dive into that. I don't want to dive into that whole, you know, that's a mental headspace thing that I don't understand right now, Luke. But Amber Heard, yeah, she wears the exact same thing Johnny Depp wears the day after, which is mind-boggling and scary, if you will.
I followed along in just the clips that I see that are posted online. And that's some crazy stuff.
Shout out to Johnny's lawyer, Camille Vasquez, I believe. She is crushing it. I mean, the amount of times she hit the button and said what she would say hearsay or, you know, something like that, or whatever, when the lawyers of Amber Heard were making claims, she was bodying everybody. It's awesome to watch.
There's also something, I saw the video of her, like, just being so friendly to John. There's something, like, I don't know, maybe it's just me, like, endearing of almost how childlike Johnny Depp can be. Like, she had to open up his yeah. thing to get him his pens, and he's like coloring while he's sitting. Like, I don't know, there's just
they're both weird people.
They are weird.
Yeah,
people.
They're both. I wouldn't say weird. That's rude. Interesting
well,
people.
That's okay. We could. Johnny just seems at certain times not immature, innocent, I guess. And that's probably a bad word to use when we're talking about a court case. But he just seems like he still has that childlike innocence. Like, he's coloring while he's sitting there and. I don't know. She had to get him, like, his pens, and she gave him his drink. Like, are you thirsty? It's just funny. Maybe it's just that he's a celebrity, and they're always pampered. But that's a funny interaction.
And he's paying those lawyer fees.
That's also true. That's true. They're getting paid, so they're going to get him his water and everything. We'll wrap up hour two next. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
We can say goodnight.
Wrapping up hour two of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. I can't hear this song anymore and not think of 50 First Dates, Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore. Which, by the way, Adam Sandler's coming out with this new movie, the basketball movie called Hustle, which will be on Netflix. I think it comes out, I think, like the next couple of weeks. And I think Boban, the aforementioned Boban from the Mavs, I think he's in it. He's not the star, but I believe he plays a little bit role in the movie. If you're not familiar, Sandler is like a washed-up basketball scout trying to find that next basketball player that's going to save him. And he believes he found him, like an international player that he tries to bring here to the States. It's essentially just like the movie, but I think it's more serious. But it's just like the movie The Scout, the baseball movie from the early 90s, when it was like the same idea. Albert Brooks was the scout, and he was hoping that Brendan Fraser, Steve Nebraska, is the name of the pitcher, played by Brendan Fraser. He was hoping he'd be his saving grace. He'd get him back in the game. And he throws a perfect game on 81 consecutive strikes, all fastballs until the last pitch. A ridiculous movie. This is going to be the basketball version. Adam Sandler coming out called Hustle. We'll come back. Hour three, speaking of playoffs, the NBA playoffs. We'll get back to that next.